Ever find yourself scratching your head, like, how does a pre-marriage house flip, or, you know, maybe a family business built during a marriage, actually get split up when things go south?
Yeah, it's a total legal maze.
Right, definitely. And today, we're going full archaeology on a case that'll help you navigate it. Holman v. Holman from 2007.
Oh, yeah, Holman. Classic case.
It's like the ultimate crash course on this super important part of marital property law.
Absolutely. This one's straight out of the Missouri Court of Appeals, and let me tell you, it is a gold mine for understanding what happens when the value of separate property goes up, up, up during the marriage.
Especially when both spouses had a hand in it, right?
Exactly. It throws the source of funds rule right into the spotlight. Plus, you get to see the nitty-gritty of property division play out in real life, stuff that could totally pop up on your exams or in your future law practices.
Because it's not as easy as just looking at whose name is on the deed, is it?
Nope, not at all.
In Holman, we've got this farmhouse owned before the marriage, but then bam, big renovations happen. Then there's commercial land inherited by the husband, but a building pops up using marital funds.
And don't forget the rental property.
Oh, right. Built on his land, but funded by like a whole potluck of sources.
It's like a law school exam question came to life.
Totally.
And every scenario in this case tackles the same head scratcher.
Huh.
How does the value added during the marriage change what was initially separate property into something the marital estate can claim a piece of? So today, our mission. We're extracting the big legal principles from Holman, zeroing in on the key takeaways, and making sure you're armed and ready with how this stuff works in the real world.
Okay, so scene set. Missouri Appellate Court, they're looking over the property division that went down in the lower court during the Holman divorce.
Right.
The big point of contention, as we said, is all about whether the increase in value of certain properties the husband had before the marriage should suddenly be considered marital property just because, you know, the marriage happened.
Yeah. And here's where it gets interesting. William and Lavone Holman, the divorcing couple, actually had a prenuptial agreement. You'd think that'd settle things pretty neatly,
Yeah,
right?
you'd think.
But, plot twist, the trial court decided that agreement was, well, unconscionable.
Unconscionable, huh?
Yeah, so we'll get back to why that's a huge deal. But it basically meant the court had to go by Missouri's standard marital property laws to figure things out.
Okay, so let's break down these properties because this is where we really see the law in action. First up, we've got the farmhouse. The husband owned this before they even said, I do, right?
Right.
Back then, it was valued at like $54,640.
But get this. During the marriage, they pour a hefty $90,000 into remodeling. And it's not like they just found this money lying around. It came from selling the wife's premarital home and from a loan they took out together.
Yeah.
So by the time they get to trial, that farmhouse has ballooned in value to a cool $185,000. Talk about a serious glow-up.
Whoa. Okay, then there's the commercial property. The husband inherited this land, totally separate asset from the get-go, and at the time, it was valued at around $30,000.
But then, again during the marriage, they pull out the marital funds, a $75,000 loan this time, to put up a commercial building on that land. And guess what? By the divorce, the whole shebang was worth $127,000. See the pattern emerging.
Marital investment equals a boost in value.
Big go.
Last but not least, the rental house. This one's a little bit of a mixed bag, right?
Basically.
It went up on the same plot as the farmhouse, so on the husband's premarital property.
Exactly. And the funding for this rental house, well, it was like a financial potluck. Some came from a marital loan,
Yeah.
a chunk from the wife's son, who has a disability, and this is an important part of it, came from rental income that came in during the marriage.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you can see why this case ended up in the appellate court's hands. The big legal question is, did the trial court get it right by labeling the increase in the value of the husband's premarital properties as marital property? After all, he owned them before they tied the knot.
Right.
The real crux is figuring out the legal way to deal with that extra value when things from the marriage, like money or even effort, have played a role. Enter the source of funds rule. This rule is basically the decoder ring for untangling situations where separate property and marital contributions get all mixed up. And remember that prenuptial agreement that got tossed out? That's a whole other layer to this case.
Okay, hold on. Let's break down the source of funds rule because it
Yeah.
sounds like the key to this whole
That's
puzzle.
correct.
What's the big idea behind it?
Okay, so what's really cool about the source of funds rule is that it gets that in a marriage, stuff gets mixed together. Like, it's not always black and white.
Yeah.
So when you have a property that's gone up in value because of pre-marriage contributions and stuff that happened during the marriage, the rule says, hey, ownership should reflect that. It's not just all yours or all mine.
So it's about dividing things up based on where the money came from.
Right, exactly. It's about making sure everyone gets their fair share. And the rule even have a handy-dandy formula to calculate how much is separate and how much is marital. Basically, it looks at how much the non-marital contribution was compared to the total investment. You use that ratio on the fair market value of the property at the time of divorce, and boom, you've got the non-marital share, whatever's left over. Marital property, up for grabs.
Let's try that out on the farmhouse. Can you walk us through how the formula works with the numbers we've got?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So with the farmhouse, the husband starts with a $54,640 stake. That's what it was worth before the marriage. Then they put in $90,000 for renovations, money from the marriage. Add those together, you get a total investment of $144,640. Now, to figure out how much of that final $185,000 value is his separate property, we take $144,640 and multiply that by $185,000. That gives us roughly $69,640 as the husband's separate property piece.
Got it.
The rest, marital.
Okay, so $185,000 total minus that, let's call it $69,640 non-marital share, which comes out to around $115,360. That's the marital portion.
Yeah, and that $115,360, it goes right into the marital estate, ready to be divvied up between William and Lavone.
Makes sense.
Now, Holman really focuses on those money contributions, but it's important to remember, marital contributions isn't just about cold, hard cash. It can also mean a spouse putting in serious elbow grease that pumps up the value of a property. Let's say Lavone had done a big chunk of the farmhouse renovations herself that could also be argued as a marital contribution.
Right.
Though in this particular case, the focus was really on the money side. Another thing to remember, as we saw with that rental house, is that any income that property generates during the marriage, that's generally considered a marital asset, no matter who owned the property originally.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, so even though the farmhouse was his to begin with, all those marital funds that went into fixing it up meant the marriage had a pretty big stake in its appreciation.
Absolutely.
Now, what about that commercial property? He inherited land, so that's going to be separate, right?
Right. The land itself, at its original $30,000 value, stayed his separate property.
Yeah.
But the commercial building, well, that was funded entirely by a $75,000 loan from the marriage. So the court basically saw the increase in value that came from the building as entirely marital. It's like the land is separate and the building on top is marital. Two different things in the same spot.
Got it. And the rental house. Built on his land, but with that mix of funding. Sounds like the most complicated one.
It is a bit of a head-scratcher. Since it was built on his land, that base, that foundation, stayed non-marital. But the money.
Yeah.
It came from a marital loan. A bit from the wife's son, which is a separate legal thing from splitting assets between the spouses. And then, importantly, some came from rental income they got during the marriage.
Oh, yeah.
So because that marital loan played a big role in building it, and because rent money during the marriage is a marital asset, the rental house was mostly treated as marital property, even though it was sitting on separate land.
So the lesson here is follow the money.
Yeah, figure out what fueled the increase in value during the marriage. And the appellate court, when they looked back at what the trial court did, they mostly agreed with this approach, the idea that if something from the marriage helps a property become more valuable, the marriage gets a share.
But you mentioned earlier that the appellate court did make some changes, right?
Right. While they agreed with the main idea, they spotted a few errors in how the trial court had crunched the numbers and valued things. They basically clarified how to use the source of funds rule correctly and tweaked the figures to make them line up.
Makes sense.
It just shows that even when you got the law down pat, those tiny details, how you calculate and apply it, that matters. A little slip up can be the difference between winning and losing these kinds of cases.
That's kind of scary.
Yeah, it is.
But also, good to know.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, this has been super helpful, but can we sum up the biggest takeaways for our listeners? You know, all those law students out there, the stuff they absolutely need to remember from Holman.
Okay, so the most important thing, the foundation, is that source of funds rule.
Mm.
It's the boss when it comes to deciding if property is separate or marital. And you got to get this.
Yeah.
Just because a property goes up in value during a marriage doesn't automatically make that increase separate. If money or effort from the marriage played a role, the marital estate gets a slice.
Okay, so that's a big one to underline. What else is there for our future lawyers to really take to heart?
Here's something that goes beyond just knowing the law. It's about actually being a good lawyer. Pleadings, they matter. Like, a lot. The fact that the husband had that prenuptial agreement is huge, But because his legal team messed up, they didn't use it as a defense the right way early on, and the court basically ignored it.
Oh, wow.
It's a hard lesson, but a crucial one. You can have the best argument in the world, but if you don't present it right and at the right time, you might as well not have it at all. This kind of mistake. It could be the difference between winning a case and facing a legal malpractice lawsuit.
That's a pretty big wake-up call.
Yeah.
Okay, what other gems should students take away from this case?
That saying, the devil is in the details,
nah.
It's never truer than in family law, especially when you're arguing about who gets what property. Holman screams at us to keep super detailed records about where the money for every asset came from.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to be able to trace it back. Did it come from earnings before the marriage, a gift, income during the marriage, a loan? Being able to prove these things, it's not just a good idea, it's essential if you want to use that source of funds rule, right, and figure out what parts of the property are marital and which parts are separate.
Okay, so keep good records. Got it. To really drive this home, can we do a quick rewind on that farmhouse calculation, just so everyone's clear on how the source of funds rule works in action?
Absolutely. So picture it. The farmhouse starts at the husband's, worth $54,640. Then, during the marriage, they put in $90,000 for renovations, money from the marriage. Total investment, $144,640. At divorce time, the farmhouse is worth $185,000. To find the husband's non-marital share, you take his initial contribution, $54,640, divided by the total investment, $144,640, and then multiply that by the final value, $185,000. Like we said before, that comes out to about $69,640, the leftover $115,360. That's marital property, ready to be split. It really shows how putting money from the marriage into a separate asset gives the marriage a share of the increased value. That's the heart and soul of the source of funds rule.
Yeah, okay. That makes it really clear. This deep dive has been, it's been eye-opening, to say the least.
It is a fascinating case.
So the big lessons from Holman v. Holman, we learned all about that source of funds rule and how contributions from the marriage can completely change the nature of separate property. We also saw how messing up those procedural steps, like forgetting to use a defense properly, can have disastrous results.
Right.
And last but not least, we learned that keeping detailed financial records in marital property cases is like non-negotiable.
Totally agree. Holman really drives home that point. Splitting up property in a divorce can be surprisingly messy, especially when you have assets that have a mix of pre-marriage and during marriage elements. It's way more than just who owned it first.
Absolutely. So as we wrap up, here's a final thought to chew on. Thinking about this source of funds rule, how do you think actively mixing separate and marital assets could make property division even more complicated? And what steps could people take during their marriage to keep their separate and marital holdings more distinct?
It's something to consider, for sure. Yeah. Especially for anyone thinking about a career in family law.
Yeah, big implications, both legally and just practically. Well, that brings us to the end of our deep dive into Holman v. Holman.
It was a good one.
Hope you found it helpful and that you walked away with a better grasp on the ins and outs of marital property division. Until next time.
See you then.